Hey everyone, got a great episode for you today. I've got a third generation beekeeper from the US. His business is called Foothills Farm and Apiary and offers nukes, production queens and breeders. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, Brandon, do you have a funny beekeeping story you'd like to start us off with today?
I do. It actually happened to me last season. We were in the deep of spring, getting queens out and caging them, mated queens out. And I went to go grab some nurse bees out of one of my hives. And I actually, I didn't have a smoker with me. So it was really, it was just a really quick thing I needed to do. So I went into it without a smoker and I actually half tripped and knocked it loose. And I got lit up right in the family jewels through my jeans. I don't recommend it one bit.
Yeah, it's always when you take this shortcut, isn't it?
Yeah, I was like, man, I was kicking myself too. I was like, I'm never doing that again. Never, you know. They were happy too, but I hit their hive pretty hard when I tripped and I went in to, you know, grab some nurse bees and they were just not about it that day. So and I ran flailing around. It was crazy. And one of the guys I actually had working for me at the time recorded it, not knowing that was going to happen, but he had it on film. So now I get to relive it every time I see it. So,
oh, that's fantastic. Oh, great. So tell us what it was like growing up on a farm with a family that was doing bees.
Well, we had cows and other livestock as well. But I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I was always intrigued from a young age. My grandfather had a lot of bees, and he still does to this day. He's in his upper 80s now, though, but he's getting quite old. But I was always around them, you know, and I always thought they were fascinating. And my father and my uncle also are beekeepers as well. Not on the grand scale that I am or my grandfather is, but, you know, it's always been in my life in one way, shape or another. Whether it was like going to my grandfather's to get a jar of honey, you know, that he had just pulled, or helping him, you know, pull honey, you know, and spinning around a crank, you know, throwing honey out. But it was always something. So it's, yeah.
Did your grandfather raise his own bees?
Yeah, he did, and he still does.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Yep, so what method was he using?
He was just doing normal queen rearing, similar to how we do today. Well, I take that back. He did the lazy way. You know, it was just walk away splits a lot of the times.
Okay. Yep.
You know, or putting a queen cell in, but he never like grafted or, you know, went that far in queen rearing. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the gist of it. It was a very lax operation, but it was, you know, it was just more for producing honey and, you know, the company of some extra livestock.
Excellent. No, I think that's what a lot of people do. And if you're focusing on honey production, it's a great way to go.
Yeah, totally.
So can you tell us what your current breeding program is looking like at the moment?
So let me get my notes here. My current breeding program, I have a multifaceted approach. I've been doing this for 6 years, my breeding program, and I specialize in sustainable and chemical-free practices. The program integrates artificial insemination and selective breeding to enhance honeybee genetics.
Excellent. That's a great way of packaging it all together. So you're doing a bit of,
you know,
VSH.
Yeah, yes, I focus on VSH, but I also focus on allogrooming traits as well. Mm-hmm. So the complete opposite end of those hygienic traits, you know, with, versus, you know, recapping, uncapping brood with VSH to allogrooming, where they actually rip off legs or actually chew the mites up and then dispose of them out of the
Yeah,
hive.
excellent.
Yeah.
So how are you measuring that?
So for the allo grooming behavior, it's honestly very meticulous. I would honestly prefer doing Harbo assays all day for VSH, and that's even a pain in the butt. But for allo grooming, so what I'll do, and there's not a ton of research either. I base my assays off Dr. Peck and Greg Hunt up at Purdue University, who's worked with a lot of groomer traits over the years. I'll take essentially it's a sticky board. We stick under a 10 frame hive or A frame hive with a screen bottom board, and we'll come back. So you'll take a sticky board. It's usually gridded out. I use Vaseline, or you can use like Pam cooking spray. There's a few different things you can use, but I prefer Vaseline. It just works the best for what I do. I'll leave it. I'll come back in 3 days, and I will go through. I don't go through that day if I don't have to. You can actually store these grids on like shelves, like in your garage or lab or wherever you're working. As long as you don't have like ants and other bugs getting into them, it won't really skew the data. But anyway, I'll set those aside, and then when I'm ready, I usually try to do it the day I pull them. But once I pull them, I'll sit down, I'll pull all the mites off, count them. Inspect each and every one of them to make sure they're actually being, chewed up, or they're missing legs, or missing, parts of their bodies, and these are adult mites as well, of course. After I have that number, I'll actually go back, and go in the hive and do a half cup alcohol wash. It's roughly about 300 bees. You can do the sugar shakes as well, but I use alcohol wash. So I'll go through, do an alcohol wash. Pull off the remaining mites that are in that test, and then I'll get my average for the actual hive, the percentage of their grooming behavior for that hive. Most really solid tests for like groomers, you'll have between 25 to 35 percentile range if they're doing really well. You'll also have some that are like 10%, and I've also had a couple that are 40%, 45%. So it definitely ranges, and then I just kind of base my program off the higher yielding percentages, at least for the grooming.
That's
So,
fantastic. And so,
yeah,
and in the last 6 years, you've gotten into instrumental insemination. Do you want to
I
tell
have.
us, so how did you learn that? What was the learning curve there?
So I'm self-taught.
Yep.
I started, I guess that was 4 years ago now. It was right when COVID happened too, so no one was traveling, and there are only a handful of folks in the States, let alone the country, that really focus on AI. But I honestly just self-taught myself. I had some help from Corey Stevens. I had some help from Shabu Raj in Tennessee. It was mainly just phone calls and messages like, "Hey, I'm having this issue. Help me troubleshoot it." And they definitely helped a little bit with that. And honestly, it was just a lot of trial and error. And I found a, what was it? I think there's a couple YouTube videos maybe of like AI simplified. And there's definitely a lot more information out now over the past few years, but I just took what I had and I ran with it, and I am where I am today. Now, and don't get me wrong, the learning curve wasn't crazy for me, because we did do, growing up on a farm, we did do artificial insemination of horses and cows and stuff like that. So it
Yes.
was, I knew the process. I just had to scale it down under a microscope. So that was honestly probably the worst part of it, was just very meticulous, tiny movements versus, when you're working with like a 1500 pound cow, you don't really have to worry about that kind of stuff as much. But
Yeah, but it's interesting. A friend of mine recently learned how to do AI, and he was saying that there were parts that he wasn't expecting that were difficult. So, for example, he had a lot of trouble introducing the queens into nukes after the procedure, and he wasn't anticipating that. Did you experience that?
I did some, and there's actually some good information. I think Corey Stevens touched base about that too. I did it throws off their pheromone levels when they're artificially inseminated versus like naturally mated. And, or at least to my understanding, that's what happens. It's just they give off a different scent. And the like the bees can tell, you know, they're like, something's not right here. They think she's like the queen's damaged or just, you know, something's just off. So they treat it as such, like they're going to cull the queen themselves. So what I do, and what Corey and a few other people I know do, you can do a pushing cage right over some uncapped brood while she's by herself. And that, you know, give them a couple days to acclimate. The new brood that's about to hatch obviously will accept her because they don't know anything else. But after a few days, you can take that off. And 9 out of 10 times, they usually don't have any issues. Other times, and also I've also used like powdered sugar. I'll like put powdered sugar over the queens, and that helps distract them. I haven't had the best success rate with that, but it does work sometimes. It'll distract them while they're cleaning, and you know, it's sugar, so they're happy. They're not as you know, rash with their movements. And then also, at least for what I do, when I do AI, my virgins are more than always already in a closed off nook for a few days. So they are the worker bees are already, you know, used to her smells and,
Okay.
you know, her presence. And
So
then I'll take
they've
them
already been
out, and then
accepted.
yes, they've already been accepted. Yes. I don't just stick a random one into a fully, you know, a brand new split or nook that I've made. I always use like 2-frame nooks for these. I treat it like a mating nook. I use 2-frame nooks for those deeps, and I have a pretty good success rate with that. But I'll still cage them, even if I put them, if I don't use a pushing cage, I'll still cage them for like a day, you know, like a hair roller cage or something along that lines, just so I don't risk, you know, them getting killed. Yeah, you know, because you bees will do what they want to do regardless of how cautious you are. So I just try to limit that the best I can because it's a lot of work. You know, I'm popping drones and inseminating queens is a lot of work. So I try to minimize that completely across the board as much as I can.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
interesting how they sometimes they just won't accept a queen. No matter how hard you try, they just don't want to take it. And I've had that. I've actually got these special cages that you put the whole frame in, and the bees can't get to her at all. And it's only the emerging brood that comes out, and they tend to accept her a little
Oh.
bit, but. I've had a queen once where even though I did that, I could tell the colony wasn't really happy about it, and I sort of kept her in that even for a couple of weeks. And once I took her out, they straight away waited for
Still
some
had
eggs.
issues. Yeah.
Yeah, they grabbed an egg, made some supersedia cells, and knocked her off. You know, sometimes they just don't want to accept a queen,
Yeah, no,
which
it's
is a
true. And the other thing with AI is too, you know, with, you know, most of us can handle queens fairly well if we're going to do AI. You know, when we have a queen rearing operation, but even sometimes I might be a little rough and I might injure one of her legs,
Oh, okay,
you
yeah.
know, and not notice it. So, you know, there's also that, you know, there's also that bit of error that could happen as well. Like you might injure them in the process and not realize it. And then that could also be a red flag for when you put her back in and everything else goes well, but then they're like, well, she's still injured. We need to make a new one. So I'm not sure what your friend did, but that also can happen. So
Yeah, I think
kind
it's
of
just
rant.
getting.
Sorry, I kind of ranted there. So,
No,
but yeah,
that's
that's the
great. That's
gist of
great.
it
It's
though.
I think it's interesting, you know, learning the whole process, and I think it's great that you taught yourself for the most part. So what how did you find catching drones and keeping those ready for the process?
That wasn't that difficult, actually. I just put so my drones in the time of the season that I do AI, I'll just put like a plastic queen excluder. Mine usually are like 1 to 2 p.m. in the day time is when they're very, very active, like when the mature ones are really active. So I'll just take a queen excluder, like a piece I've cut out of like a plastic one. And I'll put it over the entrance of the hive, and I'll just sit there and pick them out, and then I put them into a I think they're called butterfly cages. They're very mesh cages, and they have like sleeves you can put your arms through. And you get them off Amazon. They're really cheap. They're like $10 or $15. And then I'll keep them in there. And then I'll, if I'm, in one of my different yards, I'll put, well, regardless of when I transfer drones, they don't really have a long shelf life outside of the hive. So I'll put honey on the outside of the mesh, so that way they can eat, and stay content for the drive. But it really just depends. And then I'll take them back to the laboratory. I'll pop them. I'll try not to contaminate them when I pop them, or make sure they're mature. And then I'll pull it up and use it.
Excellent. So
Yeah.
it's really interesting. So I suppose you're doing all your breeders this way now.
Yes.
Excellent. And did you think that it's something that you're happy that you've done, or do you think you liked your old program and you probably didn't need to? How do you think? Do you think it was a really
No,
worthwhile move?
I think it was to an extent. I had the time to do it. I had the financial resources to do it. And it was just something I felt called to do. And it's the fact that you can speed up breeding, like a natural bee program without AI, it might take you 10 seasons to get a result you might want, versus I can try it in one or two seasons and get the same result. And if I don't like it, I can change it within a season. So it's all about a timeline to me. And not that I have anything against people that do take 10 or 20 years to produce something great. Time is money, and I love to I just I love to I'm just it gets me really excited to do it. So to me, I just think it's worth the time. It's worth your time, because there's always something in the yards to do. There, you like you're always busy in bee season. So if you can like help create those nicer genetics, then I think it's worth it 10 out of 10 times. And all in my whole motto for my my program is just building a better bee. I don't really, we're treatment free. I don't do any kind of treatments at all. I they do work to an extent. Some of them do work to an extent, but you have to adjust and adapt to the current climate, and the mites are going to continue to adapt as well to those treatments. So I just think AI is a really good way to combat that and try to catch up, because we're always playing catch up, it seems like, with Varroa.
Well, me too soon. It's interesting how
Oh yeah, it just came out there, didn't it? Or like, isn't it a new thing in Australia? Right?
it's been
Yeah.
here for a couple of
Okay.
years now. It's not currently where I live, but apparently it should, they think it'll be here very soon, if not
Yeah.
already. But it's interesting going back to AI. Occasionally I'll speak to someone who says, "Oh yeah, I've got all the AI stuff, but I don't really use it." And I think, "Oh, that's interesting." And so they just, for whatever reason, it didn't really work for them. But it's not that all that uncommon.
Yeah, no, I've definitely heard that from more people than none. It's definitely a meticulous process, and you have to have a lot of patience, and just understanding that it's going to take a lot of time. It's going to, there is a learning curve. It is very expensive, and it is very time consuming. But I think it outweighs the other, the alternative. So that's, to me, it's worth it. So I just and I and I'm OC anyway, so I really enjoy that stuff. At least I do personally. I don't know about some people, but it's just I like being, a backyard scientist. I really enjoy it.
Absolutely. And a few of these people I spoke to, I said, "So, what happened there? Was it difficult, or what was the issue?" And they sort of said, "Oh, well, yeah, at the end of the day, it was just more cost effective and reliable for me to go back to buying Breeder Queens." And I thought, "Okay, yeah,
Totally,
interesting,
totally.
yeah." So it's so
But you had to have
it
somebody
works
to
for
make the
some people.
breeders too, Yeah.
It sort of seems to work really well for some people, and other people not so well. So that's I always found that interesting. Now, one of the things that you do is you use one of these 1500 egg incubators, chicken egg incubators. Do you want to tell us about how that works?
Do. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's a Juke, it's GQF incubator. It's a chicken incubator. They're made in America. I used to just use a like just a normal styrofoam incubator from like your agricultural store, which works. They work great. But I wanted to scale up, and it has shelves, and it's very like precise with temperature control and humidity control. And I just like buying new toys.
Yeah.
And just, more or less, I just like new equipment, and I came across this company, and I used them for the first time last season, and it was just, I had so much room, I couldn't fill it up with queen cells. And it just, I don't know, it just made me really happy. I really thoroughly enjoy that brand and that company. They make a stand-up incubator. So
Yeah, well, it looks really great, and I think it is the same one as it that Ian Stepley uses, isn't it?
probably there's only like I think there's only two or three incubator companies in America, and GQF is like one of the big bugaboos that a lot of, chicken farmers use and stuff like that too. So probably, I'm honestly not sure, so I couldn't comment on that, but more than likely that's probably what he's using.
Okay, yeah, great. So, do you want to tell us where customers can find you in terms of your website and your social media and all that kind of stuff?
Oh yeah, of course. So I have a Facebook farm page right now, Foothills Farm NC. We also have an Instagram, Foothills Farm NC, and my email is foothillsfarmnc@gmail.com. We also are working on a website right now. I should have it up and running in the next few weeks, right before season starts, and that will be foothillsfarmnc.com. So,
And that's where customers can go if they
yep.
want to buy breeders inside the US. And
Yes.
do you ship right across the US?
Right now, I shipped all 50 states. So yeah, that's about it. But
Excellent.
nothing international.
Yeah. And you're working with another business too, is that correct?
Yes, so I am affiliated with Sting Stoppers. They are a jacket company. They produce suits and jackets. And I think there's actually going to be a link in this post when it gets aired. But I went through probably a dozen companies over the years, and I got on these jackets about 2 years ago, and they're absolutely fantastic. I've never got stung in them. They're very breathable. Like, I'm not burning up. I don't know how the summers are where you're at, but the summers in the South in the US are pretty brutal. So I can just wear a t-shirt under all my stuff, and I don't have to worry about getting stung, and it's like wearing nothing. So I wanted to mention those. There'll be a link, and you guys will be able to get 10% off. And that also helps with my bee research too. They help me out with my bee research, help supporting that monetarily. So yeah,
Excellent.
good company, great company, good customer service. And they also offer a warranty on their clothes, on their PPE, which I think was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
Oh,
yeah.
fantastic. Well, thanks a lot, Brandon, for coming on and chatting about that process of getting into AI and the work that you're doing on your farm. Really appreciate it.
Of course, I really appreciate you having me, and yeah, I hope you guys have a good season out there as well.
Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that episode having a chat with Brandon. Really nice guy, and what an interesting topic, artificial insemination. If you're getting into it or you are thinking about getting into it, I hope that episode gave you some inspiration, gave you some confidence, answered a few of your questions. If you've got some more questions, I'm sure Brandon wouldn't mind answering, so I'll leave his details in the show notes and you can send him an email. Also, you could leave a question in the Breeding the Honeybee Facebook group. That's the community group for this podcast. I'll link it in the show notes as well. Jump on, leave a question, and hopefully a few of us can help you out. Now, next month, I've got Mary Laxon on the podcast. Mary is from Georgia in the USA, and she's got a nice beekeeping business selling nukes, selling honey, doing queens for people in the community and herself. And she works together with her daughter, so it's a really nice family business. And she's going to tell us what it's like to incorporate queen rearing into your general beekeeping business. It's a really nice episode, and if that sounds interesting to you,
you might want to consider subscribing so that you don't miss it next month. Now, I want to say all the best to my friends in the Northern Hemisphere. Good luck with your queen rearing season, which is just beginning. I'm really jealous because I'm just finishing my beekeeping season. I'm actually heading out this afternoon to do the last thing, which is weighing my hives and making sure that they're all good for winter. And yeah, I'm really jealous. So all the best. Hope you get some nice weather. And thanks again for tuning into this podcast today. I really appreciate it. And catch you next time.